Football on Off the Ball.
I had a 2-year plan to get back to the Premier Division, and when Shelburne came knocking, I couldn't say no, so...
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
US Sport
on Off the Ball
with 888 Casino. 18 plus see gamblingcare.ie.
Just another random weekend in the NFL and our lives as NFL fans. Cian, good afternoon to you.
Yeah, a quiet one. No announcements or anything made at the weekend, I don't think, was there?
Mick, how are you?
Good.
No official announcement, Cian, but I think if they were to suddenly take away the NFL game in Dublin, well, then screw them. We won't have them. We never liked them anyway.
I'd hope the official announcement is more certain of where Ireland is too, in that area of Great Britain that Rog made an old mistake on.
Unless the game's going to Windsor Park and they're going to suddenly find the money to build it.
Was there a tongue-tied issue there where he goes, it might be in the UK or close to the UK or in the geographical area of the UK that isn't the UK but might be the UK?
Yeah,
Ireland.
I don't think he thinks Ireland is a part of Britain, honestly. I don't. And look... Ultimately, doesn't
it's
really
not
matter.
Like us to get hung up in these things, anyway. Is it? We don't remember these things.
Yeah, exactly.
No, it sounds like it's definitely going to happen at this stage. And to be honest, like I know there's kind of always a little bit of a smaller minority of people who are like, oh, why do we shut Dublin down for college football games and stuff like that? I would say generally the experience has been good. Generally, the impact on us has been positive. And I think the thing I really like about the NFL coming here is it kind of perfectly fits into the calendar for us because. Like Six Nations is in February. The Gaa season is in the summer. Like this stretch right now, we've got like Nations League, we've got international friendlies. Like the FAI Cup final is at the weekend, but like it's not going to clash with that. It's an easy time for us to fit in an NFL game, and it kind of works perfectly. And it's not like the college football where it has to be that first weekend of the year. The NFL can pick and choose really when they want to be here.
I think it'll be November. I think that so it's about a year away.
So during. November internationals.
Yeah, but again, Sunday, we're now playing Fridays and Saturdays. The Friday night games, that's great. Notwithstanding everybody complaining about the, which I'm not going to get into here.
Kerr doesn't like anybody complaining about anything.
Well, I just think that maybe if the team...
It's election season, it's time to complain.
Stop knocking the ball on, maybe you'll have something to cheer about.
Were people blaming the Friday nights on Ireland's dreadful performance?
No, the atmosphere was apparently not amazing from minute one to the end. I thought the atmosphere was totally fine. It was really brilliant after Ireland scored, and then the best team on the night managed to kill the atmosphere by holding on to the ball and controlling the time of possession for our listeners here, if you're wondering what happened in the rugby match. Which is a totally different
sport. For anyone who complains we talk too much rugby on this station, we're really helping them out right now, aren't we?
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I'm just trying to find some of the other players who were picked after Jake Moody in the third round of the NFL draft, which is now going down as literally one of the worst picks in the history of the San Francisco 49ers. So anybody who missed this at the weekend, you missed just like Jake Moody did, 3 kicks in a row, before Deebo Samuel comes over and starts lipping at him and his long snapper gets into it and then ends up taking a stiff iron to the throat. From Deebo.
Homer Simpson style.
I'm like, fair play to him for actually coming back afterwards. Moody, the kicker, is kind of protecting the long snapper who's defending his honour. Nobody comes well out of this, really. And Moody like has an old scuttery squeak of a kick to win the game afterwards. But nobody comes well out of that.
I do kind of feel bad for him too because we have this expectation now that 49 and 50 yard field goals are suddenly automatic and that's just never been the case. 2 of his 3 missed field goals were 49 and 50 yard field goals and the 44 yarder one he should have hit. But the way he missed them as well, like they're very slight misses. Like it's not like he's completely jarred these and messed them up. Look, I'm defending kind of the indefensible at this point because he's had such a bad run of it for the last couple of years now and because of where he was selected. There's no, like, besides Sebastian Janikowski, I don't think there's any example of a highly drafted kicker doing well and being consistently reliable at this point because you're in a situation where you're putting multiples of pressure on a position that's already under a massive amount of pressure from its starting point. But there's also examples of people like Mason Crosby who had this kind of start to their career, who struggled and struggled and struggled, and then became this incredibly reliable, incredibly good player for the Packers. So from the 49ers' point of view, it's a difficult one because you can cut bait now and say, all right, we'll get someone else. Or if you stick it out with him, you don't really know what your chances are because you obviously believe this guy is very talented as a kicker.
I'm a little bit more concerned. Like, the kicker's the kicker, right? They shouldn't have... Well, everybody knew at the time, even if he turned in to be the next Adam Vinatieri, they shouldn't have been wasting a third-round pick on someone who they could have got outside of the draft and have marginally less production. That's the idea of drafting, is what your value for what you're giving up and so on, right? So outside of that, why is Deebo Samuel attacking a teammate? I would be so worried about that, just from what's going on in that locker room, where the power play is, what the attitudes are, all of that stuff. Like, talk about being like, you know, big time in somebody, you know, it's like, I'm the superstar receiver who isn't playing well this season, certainly not up to his standards. And for him to go around and kind of like, you know, like as if your man is somehow missing on purpose or something like that. You know what I mean? That's just being a bad teammate. Like,
Dontavian Wicks picked in the fifth round. Chase Brown of the Bengals picked in the fifth round. The lost opportunity there. No, look, I generally largely find myself in that camp. But of course, there's now a culture war where Deebo, he's holding the team to account. He's not here for participation medals. He's the man. And look, here's the thing.
There's ways of doing that, though.
There are. Yeah. Famously, in the Super Bowl, Travis Kelce tries to push over but doesn't have the strength to push over Andy Reid on the sideline. And we've seen this stuff before. You know, we have seen teammates get into it before, but it was such a mad game. I don't know. So, is everybody familiar that there's a narrative between Nick Bosa and Baker Mayfield? So in college, Baker did something to Nick Bosa's team.
Oh, yeah.
And something happened. I can't remember what it was. Maybe
he planted a flag on the hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, wiped his ass on it or something like that. And then Nick Bosa was the giving it the big one after he beat him, when Baker was a stand-in for somebody. I don't even think he was. It might have been at the Rams that time, or maybe it was the last time they played. But I don't know if you saw the end of the game.
Maybe
Baker Mayfield was holding off Nick Bosa.
I did see the end of the game.
Bosa has, but holding his hand was how it was described in one of the 49ers WhatsApp. What is Nick Bosa doing? Well, he used to just fall to the ground, but he couldn't do it. Baker, shut up, Nick Bosa, and get on and play some football.
It was an amazing play, though.
Like the football, Nick.
From Baker's point of view, though. Like,
he was amazing.
He was Superman there for the last kind of like quarter. Now, didn't get the touchdown in the end. I would have won the game and probably should have. And, you know, we'll probably remember the great plays rather than the results, which might end up being the story of his career. But like, for him to actually drive down and take that kind of pressure, the 49ers were getting pressure on every single snap during that drive. Now, they got four flags in a row, which I think is probably unheard of in the NFL, to get them down there. But Baker was like Superman. You actually just couldn't take him down. And that play, I think, with Bosa hanging out of his left arm as he drifts to the right and manages to throw with the ball in his right arm, I think will, like, it won't be as famous as the one we talked about last week with Barkley doing the backwards jump, but I think it'll be one of the images of the season for sure.
Yeah, Baker's
really
good.
That was kind of the story of this game for both sides, because you're talking about Deebo holding the kicker and long snapper account. What about holding the offense account for not scoring enough touchdowns? Because this seems to be a thing now with this team where you're missing a lot of field goals, but you're also kicking a lot of field goals for some reason. And like, it's not like Brock Purdy can't throw in the end zone. We've seen with that George Kittle touchdown to the back corner, the end zone was phenomenal. Like the first touchdown to... his name's escaping me right now. I have it right in front of me, the rookie. Rookie Pearsall. That touchdown obviously comes from deep, but they've got Pearsall, they've got Juwan Jennings, even without Brandon Ayuk, they still have these big receivers who they should be able to score in the end zone. So you're getting to that position with Baker at the end. He's in a similar situation where he doesn't get in the end zone. He gets all the flags and all that kind of stuff. It really felt like it was two teams that are like 4-4, 5-4, in and around 500, kind of both playing to the level they've played at this year. It's just, we expect one of those teams to be at a much higher level, and we kind of expect the other one to be where they are. And Baker will have those moments. Like, I think Mickey just said it there. He'll have all these moments. He'll have these big plays. It's just the consistency of how often he does it. And that's kind of been the knock on him over the course of his career, really, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think Baker is coming into his own. And I would certainly be happy to be rooting for Baker for whatever interest you might have in him. The real reason we're talking about this is Christian McCaffrey is back, and they do have... It is possible that either of these two teams could go on something of a run.
Yeah, absolutely. And I felt really, really down on the 49ers before this game, and I actually feel better about them somehow. And the main reason for that is Pearsall, I think, more and Kim.
Oh, we're just having a little bit of trouble with Keane's line.
Pretty well. Had the big touchdown, had two catches.
Your line is kind of in and out there, Keane. I think it nearly settled down there. Pearsall had the two catches. Is that, or Christian McCaffrey on the wheel right in the fourth quarter? Is that the one you're talking about?
He's gone.
All right. Well, we'll try and dial Keane back there. But So look,
he's got a point though. It's like they're doing what Shanahan offenses do and find weapons. So suddenly, Juwan Jennings is back into the team last night after an injury, and you're like, oh yeah, he'll actually easily step up and be the kind of second receiver on this team, and he has enough in him. Pearsall is obviously back, and it's a great story in itself. But yeah, I don't know. I found I just think they're lacking something. I don't know what it is, but there's something just not right there. All the talent is there. All the moments are there. Like Purdy holding onto that ball for the Kittle touchdown was superb.
Purdy is just very good.
He is, yeah, he's brilliant, but there's just something not clicking. They're just, you can see them being in too many games.
Well, it's going to be a massive struggle for them to get to a point where they're in big games that really count. But that, look, we do see teams grow into a season. Something happens. There's a clear the air. I wanted to ask about Shanahan, though, right? So obviously, him and his offense is held up as the tree that has changed the way the game is played over the best part of, well, since he's arrived there 6-7 seasons ago, right? But I do wonder if there's a bit of Andy Reid in Philadelphia where you know he's one of the best coaches in the league, but something has happened and it's not reaching, it's not breaking out. Andy Reid left Philadelphia and almost immediately they put together a Super Bowl winning squad and team, won the Super Bowl, and he went and put together
one of the best teams. Yeah, even before Mahomes, they were, you know,
really good.
Probably had the best overall record in the 2-3 years he was there before Mahomes even started playing. Like, so.
And now, even when they're bad, they're good. So, is there a possibility that something happened here that is not fixable? That the Shanahan era is going to come to an end without him winning a Super Bowl in San Francisco, even though he's been the most important figure on offense? Is that a potential outcome that we're on track for here, Cian, if they don't somehow get back to the Super Bowl?
I guess it depends where you fall on the Andy Reid spectrum, because the Eagles won a Super Bowl after firing Andy Reid, okay? Well, I think it was a mutual departing, whatever you want to call it. Ultimately, they fired him. But they won a Super Bowl, but they kind of fluked it with Nick Foles, and they didn't really build anything lasting until the current team that they have. Like, they had Chip Kelly in there. They had the Sam Bradford in there at one stage. They had these different eras. Doug Peterson obviously won the Super Bowl. And I kind of feel like, if we go back in time and we say to them, do you want Andy Reid or do you want this string of coaches? You'll get one Super Bowl with this string of coaches, but how many do you think you'll get with Andy Reid? And maybe Andy Reid learned from being fired. Maybe he changed the way he was doing things. I don't necessarily think that's true. I think it was just a matter of playing out over time and only one team can win a Super Bowl every single year. So I find it hard to make the argument that he should be replaced and gotten rid of, because I don't think you're going to improve on him. But I can also understand the frustration of a fan who's like, we've got to this point, we seem to be plateauing, things don't seem to be getting better and improving. And maybe there is a philosophy element to that. They've tried to expand their offense and change their offense around. It has worked to some degree. The injuries have made it kind of hard to judge at times as well. Like, you saw, like, at the end, in the fourth quarter of that game, George Kittle breaks off that huge play where he makes a defender miss out on the sideline after running back on the opposite side with the play action going the other way. That's like the fundamental Kyle Shanahan offense. And I don't think we see as much of that as we used to see. So maybe it's actually kind of an element of he needs to get back to more of what that philosophy was, more of that structure was. Because once Purdy came in, he clearly tried to open the passing game up a little bit more. And I think Purdy has played well this year, but not as well as he did last year or the year before, even, I don't think. I think he's at a level now where he needs to show better accuracy. He's throwing a lot of high balls. He's throwing a lot of passes just off place where they are still being completed, but he's still relying on his teammates a little bit more than he should be. So there's a step forward that needs to be taken with that offense and with that group as a whole. But is Shanahan the person to do it? Is someone else the person to do it? The other question is, will John Lynch maybe need to go? Maybe they need to change how they're recruiting players, how they're drafting players. There's a lot of things, question marks you can ask here, but ultimately, Dre Greenlaw's coming back, Christian McCaffrey's coming back. I think we'll know more about this team in a month rather than we do right now, just because those are two massive pieces getting healthy, assuming they stay healthy, of course.
It's a bit of an early chat, but I have to say I was reminded of somebody yesterday and completely forgot when Dak Prescott got injured, that the Cowboys had, and who Trey I thought Lance was a backup quarterback, and Trey Lance, and they just played Cooper Rush, and Lance came in for a couple of plays last night, and you're thinking, wow, like, that was number 3 in the draft and he can't get past Cooper Rush in Dallas. And it's just like, I know they got Purdy and it evened itself out and so on, but
it doesn't, like, even itself
it's
out
such
though,
a whiff, like, and Lynch or Shanahan, who apparently, you know, was heavily involved, someone has to eventually account for that as well, you know?
Yeah, look,
not with their jobs, but
it's, and so that, what is a suitable punishment for that? Like, you know, you just have to learn and keep going, and that's the difficulty. It's such a weird thing, and that is the Puka Nacua went in the fifth round of that draft that they picked Jake Moody in the third round. Like, you know. But they have had so many other draft smashes that it's like, it's such a lottery, right? For all the money and the research that goes in, you can't tell that the guy who's Mr. Irrelevant is going to be a top 10 quarterback. And he's definitely he's in that eighth to, and there are some things that he does that are absolutely elite and he could continue to improve. And if he continues to improve, you know, you can absolutely win Super Bowls with him. But I would definitely be against blowing this up because what they had before was chaos. So Harbaugh came in and that was great, but it faded. And then there was two seasons of absolute chaos with coaches who should never have been there. And then they got Shanahan who grew into the role, but it took him 3 or 4 years to get good. So
I think you've been
through the growing pains.
I think you trust once in a generation minds, and I don't know whether maybe you have to get better as a head coach or whatever, but if you've got someone like Kyle Shanahan that you can, as you mentioned, create coaching trees. You know what I mean? It's like, who's currently in their prime in the NFL who you're probably thinking of as people who are innovators, people who are going to change the game? And it's McVay and it's Shanahan, and obviously it's Andy Reid. There's, like, you know, in an offense side, there's probably nobody else, you know. So how, you just don't move on from someone like that, I don't think, unless things get really, really bad.
It's also very easy to forget that he's 44 years of age. He could still be a head coach in 20 years. Like, Andy Reid didn't win his first Super Bowl until he was in his 50s, I don't think. Like, he's not someone who's, like, let's say, as an easy comparison, and you already mentioned him, and we already, Jerry Jones has done enough dumb stuff the weekend to deserve even more criticism here. Mike McCarthy, for example, if you look at him and you're like, right, let's stick it out with him, we believe in him, we trust him, because he's won a Super Bowl in the past. But he's an old head coach. Nothing is going to change with who Mike McCarthy is and who he's always been, and we've seen that proven when he got the Cowboys job. Whereas Shanahan, we've seen him in moments kind of go, yeah, I shouldn't have done that, should I? I've got to figure this out. We've got to do that better. I've got to figure that out. So I do think there's an ability to grow there still.
Yeah, the Cowboys basically, Eric Ten Hag did stupidly. I was like, oh, we're going to keep this going for whatever reason. It's just a lost season. It's totally, utterly lost and wasted.
Please tell me you got his post-game quote. Did you hear Jerry Jones' post-game quote?
No.
So they got blown out by the Eagles, like 34-3 or whatever it was, and like Cooper Rush started. Cooper Rush is awful, obviously, because he's not capable of being a quarterback at this level, which isn't his fault, obviously. And Jerry Jones came out afterwards and was talking about, we know where the sun is going to be when we do the coin toss, but we don't know where the sun is going to be throughout the game. He blamed the sun coming into the stadium, you know, that billion-dollar stadium that he built, on the team losing by 30 points. It's like, what are we doing here? Just acknowledge you've built a terrible team, blow it up and get a reset button, please.
So the sun was in CeeDee Lamb's eyes for a drop touchdown. This sun has been shining in ever after daylight savings is there for 2-3 weeks every season, shining in, ruining the game, always there. They built a stadium. I don't know if they knew this or whatever, but they actually have curtains. They've been used for gigs and for other events and stuff like that. But for some reason, the Cowboys have just not used them. I don't know why. CeeDee Lamb was asked after the game, is like, do you want to use the curtains? He's like, yeah. Like, this, what sort of a question is that? Why aren't we? And then Jerry Jones, you know, blames other people for the sun.
It is truly remarkable. And the Eagles, are we back buying in on the Eagles, or we can't take anything serious against the Cowboys? Eagles having a really nice season, putting everything together.
Two things can be true at once. We're back in on the Eagles, and this week's game is not the reason why.
Okay. The Chiefs, I mean, I can't believe it. I really couldn't believe
it. Great sporting moment, I have to say. There was a kind of a coolness to the celebrations, that happening in their home stadium and all of that, but they stole one.
There was definitely momentary, we've just won the Super Bowl energy off Mahomes.
Yeah, it was kind of, because it's so unexpected. I think that's okay.
It was blocked down by, was it the sub tight end? Was it some guy who looked like he was 15? With a full length diving block. You're like, just block the guy.
I'm guessing he wasn't the size of a 15-year-old, unless he was the Gary Barlow's son. That game is kind of like captured this Chiefs season and why they're so difficult to talk about. But the two takeaways I kind of came away from it. One, Mahomes is getting sacked more than he ever has been. And he's getting sacked in a very specific way. He gets to the top of his drop. He holds the ball. And he's waiting for somewhere to go with it, and he can't find anywhere to go. That's a clear sign of receivers not getting open. Now, if it was a bad quarterback in there, but this is a we'd say something else. We'd have to look at it a bit more. But Mahomes has kind of earned that trust and that that belief at this stage, where we don't need to forensically examine it to understand that his receiving core is not playing well enough for him to get the ball out, which is actually making the offensive line look worse than it is. The other aspect of that is, and the other impact of that is, they don't have an identity on offense right now. It's very much scramble, figure things out as we go. What will work here? Let's try this. Let's try that. And it's because you build an identity of an offense by having repeatable plays. You have 4 or 5, 6 or 7 styles of plays that you can rely on that you know will eventually give you something back. When we talked about Shanahan running the ball outside zone, play action, that was the foundation of the offense. The Chiefs offense previously with Isaiah Pacheco was also became a power running offense. Before that with Tyreek Hill, it was a vertical passing offense where you knew you were getting 4 verts at least 10 times a game. Mahomes is going to hit 3 or 4 of them and suddenly you were down by 20 points. This offense, it's like, oh, we can try and get Wordy open over here in the flat. We can try and throw a screen to Hardman. Maybe Travis Kelce, if we scheme him open like we did for the touchdown where we hide him behind two guys and then he turns back in instead of going outside when everyone expects him to go outside. Or we have these running plays where Kareem Hunt might break a tackle every so often. And besides that, it's just like, Mahomes, go back there, figure it out, find a way to create something. And it's just not going to work, and it's not going to work against the better teams in the league. I don't really care about their record at this stage. When you're struggling against Bo Nix and the Denver Broncos, you're down 14-3, and coming back, you scrape your way back into the game rather than come steamrolling back into the game like a top team should. I'm very, very concerned about where you're at. And yes, they'll get all the benefit of the doubt with Mahomes because it's Patrick Mahomes, but right now, that's a bad football team that is just somehow undefeated still at this stage of the season.
Well, it's funny that you looked at the sacks and, you know, it was Mahomes holding the ball because of the receivers, because what I was about to talk about was in some ways almost the opposite. They weren't the sacks, but they were the pressures. And I kind of feel that can't be anything to do with receivers, because he is under, like, especially in the fourth quarter, the 2-3 drives that kind of came to nothing at the end of the game where you're thinking Mahomes has to do something here, Mahomes has to do something. He has no time. He is snapping the ball under, the ball coming into his hand, he's under pressure. There's no time for receivers to do anything. And it's funny, so maybe I completely agree with you that the receivers aren't there, but I just don't think that offensive line is protecting him well enough at the moment either, you know? And add that all together, what do you do? Now, not to bring anything back to Tom Brady, I wouldn't normally do this, but having seen every version of the Patriots with always the same guy at quarterback for 20 years, when this happened with the Patriots and this happened in later years, kind of like the 2018 team, that kind of time, Brady just got this thing where he was getting the ball out of his hands as soon as it was hitting his hand. And it was maybe it was one of the running backs or it was to Edelman, and they were always just open. The yards happened after they caught the ball. They were basically all running plays, but Brady was just getting the ball out of his hands constantly. And it would happen so fast because he just did not have time to protect himself or to protect the ball. I don't know if Mahomes is doing that enough. He's still looking for the magic play. He's looking for the magic play. He'll do the shuffle pass every now and then. But that offense is not clicking at the moment. And Keane outlined one reason why. I'm saying another. It all comes together to say that's like, you're going to make better defenses than Denver. You know, and you're going to meet them pretty soon. There, the record I think is so false, but at the same time, would you bet against them win the Super Bowl? Absolutely not. But it's because of who they are.
Have they had their bye? They must have. Have they? That was week 10. They're 9-0, so obviously they have. That was week 10, was it? Yeah,
think so.
It's been.
I think just to elaborate a little bit on Mick's point, I think he's right in the sense that the two things always work together as well. Rashee Rice's absence in true injury, like he's the only, like, if you wanted to say Mahomes play like Brady, you need to have an Edelman, you need to have a Welker, you need to have someone who can get open very quickly and someone who can work those underneath routes and catch 10 to 12 passes a game. He doesn't have anyone who can do that right now. Hopkins could have in the past, but he's a little bit slowed down. Rice was the one guy you could move all over the offense, put him in the slot, put him out wide, get the ball in his hands 10 different ways, and that kind of help you alleviate the pressure that goes on the offensive line. When the defense sees that there is no real threat outside, they're just like, all right, defensive ends, go chase them down, go get everyone, because we'll just jam the receivers at the line of scrimmage, and now no one can get open quickly. The quarterback's in this position where, oh, I need to throw the ball straight away, but there's no one I can throw the ball to.
Okay, so we don't think they're that good, but
there's
equally,
a negative conversation about a 9-0 team.
Everybody's concerned that they could
get
easily
a miracle block. Maybe that could win you the Super Bowl some years, but ultimately over the course of a long season, that's a miracle win. That's one extra win to them, but it's a loss. Like, I mean, when we were watching Red Zone at home and the Broncos got that first down, I went, "Oh, the Broncos have won this game." You know what I mean? You're given like that. That is what happened there. It's like you're not going to get that miracle block every 90 out of every 99, whatever my numbers are all skewed here. But
Bo Nix is good, and they still have a head coach who is going to be important and functional in this league over the next couple of years.
He's looking more and more like Freddie Couples every day, and I think somebody needs to point that out.
There you go. But he's not just phoning it in. He's not on a retirement. I'm taking the money. It's, you know, we know his competitive spirit sometimes went too far in New Orleans. And he had a little bit of time out of the game for,
forgot about that.
You know, reasons.
How long have they got more on the Russell Wilson contract? I think it's under 2 years. Is it?
They're still paying him.
I think whenever you trade it, it comes down into the next 2 years, regardless. So yeah. Whatever they owe him will be. The dead money will be gone after this season, I think.
Or maybe one more, I don't know. But anyway, look, they should be in good shape after that because they can start picking. They don't have enough talent in there, but they're playing very well. Like, they're likely to make the playoffs now, I would say. I know they've lost.
Yeah.
But even just seeing their level of performance.
You would think, yeah. Teams, yeah.
The other thing you have to be wary of, though, it's a rookie starting quarterback on a team that's not really capable of carrying him on offense. And rookie quarterbacks at this time of the year, this is kind of when that wall tends to come where they suddenly start to drop off and struggle a bit. So that'd be my main concern. My main concern would be Bo Nix in general with them. I think he's played well at different times, but he's not like the skill set that some of the other guys have, not like Jaden Daniels or someone like that, you know. So it's just once you get into the tougher times of the year, plays in Denver as well, it's going to be cold, going to be windy, going to be miserable at times. So we'll see, but they're definitely a far more interesting and relevant team than I expected them to be this year, to be honest.
The Steelers are finding something both on offense and defense, and they beat Washington at the weekend. Fairly controversial at the end, very end, was it?
Yeah, so basically what happened was Jaden Daniels and the offense were driving for the game-winning field goal because they were 1 point down, and they were near midfield. They got to 4th and 10. Daniels threw the ball right to the first down line because that's what Cliff Kingsbury likes doing. He likes throwing loads of curl routes, and this is kind of why you don't like throwing loads of curl routes. But Zach Ertz catches the ball, puts his knee down, has the ball right at the first down line. So there, the first down line is the 41, I believe, or the 39, whichever side it was at that line. And so if it's on the 41... they marked the ball at the 42, so it's a yard behind. So they say he got 9 yards, he needed 10. They don't. They go to the review because it's a turnover on downs, and the spot was obviously very, very wrong, no matter what point you do, because they took the ball back a yard. But then they go come out of the review and they just confirm it, and you're kind of going, no, wait, at a minimum, what happens here is you respot the ball and then you measure again, because this is where inches we're talking about. We're not talking about a full yard, nothing close to a full yard. So I'm very, very surprised at the way that happened. I don't really understand how they've done that. Maybe there's a rule change there, but it baffled me.
Has there been much discourse about that? Because I only saw it live and I was saying the same thing at home. I was like, that bad spot is going to help Washington here because there isn't enough evidence. It was really bad camera angle. There wouldn't be enough evidence to say exactly where the ball is, but because they were so far wrong, they're going to change it, guess, and then we'll see what happens, you know, because they absolutely have enough evidence to overturn the call on the field as to where the spot was.
Yeah, but they didn't.
Again, because they were so far wrong, but then they just come out and said call stands, and it was like, sorry, what? That makes literally no sense. Again, I always find with NFL, the commentators didn't pick up on this, or they didn't see. There was no, and that's why I'm interested from Keane as to whether there was much after the game about it. But again, it's just they just seem to miss these glaringly obvious things. It drives me mad every week.
It's almost like it reminds me of, remember back in Seattle when we had the replacement refs and we had the incomplete touchdown, the two officials there, like, because you can see the official running in from the side and you see him stop a full yard short of where Ertz is. And it's like, this is, can everyone not see this? I don't really understand it as well. But I think part of the reason you probably didn't get that level of discussion afterwards and then discourse in the post game, the way Washington lost the game was just incredibly stupid after that point, where they have a defensive lineman jump offside on 4th and 3 or 4th and 4, whatever it was, when everyone in the whole stadium knew that the Steelers weren't going to snap the ball. They were just trying to draw them offside. Yeah. So there was a lot of that throughout the game from Washington too. They dropped touchdowns. They dropped that touchdown. They had a couple of errors where they had receivers running the wrong route, where offensive linemen were doing the wrong, picking up the wrong assignment in pass protection. There was a dropped punt return. Like, there was a bunch of different things from Washington's point of view where you're kind of like, we didn't play well here anyway, we probably didn't deserve to win, but just the way it ended was just really, really sour.
They're both playoff teams though.
Oh, you'd have to think so. Well, Washington have 7 wins out of the day, so like, you'd imagine they'll pick up enough. Like, you know, Philadelphia might pip them to the tie. I feel like the wheels will come slightly off, but they'll make it into the first round anyway. Pittsburgh are contenders, you would have to say. Like, they're 7-2. Wilson is doing enough that has brought out like the likes of Pickens, and that offense just looks completely alive now. And Russell Wilson has still enough life in him just to bring all that talent out. The defense is unbelievable. They're playing Baltimore this week. Like, I can't wait for that game. It's always a great game, no matter what, when these two, it's probably the best divisional rivalry. And now they're both on fire, and there should be loads of points, and very, very exciting.
The Ravens.
You mentioned Pickens. You mentioned Pickens there. I think this week, like, the game he played, like, the touchdown catch alone is ridiculous. But besides that, he has a couple of really brilliant plays in it. And I'm kind of sat there thinking to myself, all the rap on Pickens has always been, oh, he's really talented, but character issues. That's why he wound up with the Steelers. He's kind of complaining. He's had issues there with Mike Tomlin and stuff like that. But you're kind of thinking to yourself, as a pure football player, is he right up there alongside, like, the Jamar Chases, Justin Jeffersons and all them? Because the talent is just supremely off the charts. And we talked about it a few weeks ago with Russell Wilson when he was brought in to replace Justin Fields. That ability to throw the ball up, to lay the ball up for his bigger wide receivers to go and get it. That's how Pickens got the first touchdown and the game-winning touchdown to Mike Williams, who was only playing a handful of snaps because he's just arrived and he needs to figure out the playbook while he's also getting healthy. That game-winning touchdown, very similar play where he's just throwing the ball up and letting a bigger athletic wide receiver go and get it. So they have a real foundation there of how to win games, with the pass rush being brilliant, keeping them in low-scoring games, Najee Harris having the best season of his career, Jalen Warren contributing with big plays out of the backfield as well. Everything's really, really good in Pittsburgh, and again, similar to the Broncos, but to a higher degree. If you told me this is where we'd be before the start of the season, I'd have been amazed. I thought this was a team that was going to win 4 or 5 games at most, and now they're looking like they're definitely going to be a playoff team at a minimum.
Everybody in Ireland's going to have to grow up supporting the Steelers now when they decide that we're the home team.
I was thinking about that.
Everybody ready?
Good time to get on board.
Was it the late game, or was certainly one of the later games, was the Texans against the Lions? What happened in this?
Oh my God! What a game of football! This to me is peak NFL. This is what the NFL should be aspiring to be, rather than being this sport where the offense scores 40 points a game every single time and faces no opposition from the defense. There was 7 turnovers in it, I think, but the beauty of that is, you have an offense on the field for the Lions and a defense on the field for the Texans, and then you have an offense on the field for the Texans and a defense on the field for the Lions. And on every single play of that game, you weren't sure who was going to make a big play, because they were competing to a degree, and they were competing in such a way that it was actually a full-on 50-50 game. CJ Stroud did not have a very good game overall. He was very consistent, but he's still making these spectacular plays. He opened the third quarter with an interception that he could have easily avoided. He piled onto that with a second interception in the third quarter. That really brought the Lions back into it and set them up to come back from 23-7 at halftime to win the game. But even while that happened, it was the most Jared Goff thing in the world, because he led this huge comeback, but he also threw 5 interceptions while doing so. He also had like a horrible game where you're kind of looking at him going, Jared Goff, what are you like? This is why we don't believe in you. And then at the end of it, he still won. One of those interceptions was a Hail Mary at the end of the second quarter, so let's not blame him too much for that. But overall, it was just a game where you were constantly had to be tuned in. Something was happening at all times. And you had like John Metchie from the Texans having a bunch of big plays out of nowhere, a guy no one's really expecting to do a whole lot. Jameson Williams made an incredible catch over the middle after he had a double catch in the ball before taking a big hit. And like, he's coming back off of that suspension and all the negativity around him lately. So it was an incredible game of football, but probably a game of football that also highlights why neither of these teams are the Ravens or at the very top of the league with the very best teams in the league right now. Although we're after Slayton, the Chiefs, so maybe they are at the top of the league right now with that group.
Did the Ravens not have the exact same performance as the Lions on Thursday night, though, against the Bengals? You know, I don't think anybody's flawless at the moment. Like,
that's the point. No one's flawless.
Yeah, they have Lamar is better than Jared Goff.
Yeah. But their collection of players is as good as anybody's, right?
Detroit's, yeah. You'd have to think so, yeah.
8-1 for the first time since 1954.
Yeah, we've talked about Goff a good bit this year, and it is like, I mean, I know that Keane is kind of giving him praise, but you know what Jared Goff is, Keane, and you can't change your mind in it. And like, you watched the first half last night and it completely confirms your opinions, but there is something in the same guy just being able to shake it off enough to go and lead a comeback. There's something in that. I know he is not flawless. I know he is never going to be like MVP, but there's something about him that wins football games. And like, I mean, don't get me wrong, he's using an insane level of talent around him at the moment on both sides of the ball to do that. And you can't be throwing 5 interceptions in a game. Absolutely not. But
But it means
there was a mad stat. There was a mad stat during the game that he's completed 31 of his last 31 passes towards Amon-Ra St. Brown. I don't know if that continued throughout the rest of the game because it was early on in it. But like that just shows you the level of efficiency and the level of understanding he has with those receivers.
And it gives the team confidence that no matter what hole they're in into the future, yeah, he's going to be able to dig them out of it. And it's very powerful. Okay, so we've done most of them. We haven't done the NFL in Munich. What's going on with the... I mean, he's not good again, is he? The little guy?
It's the Giants.
I think the problem people will argue there is the fact that you said again, because most people think he was never good. But I think it was a really important game for him. I think it was a really strong game for him. And I think the real key to it is they've changed their wide receiver core out altogether. Like, they took advantage of Jerry Jones being stupid by trading Jonathan Mingo to him, because for some reason, I don't know why anyone would trade for Jonathan Mingo. They also got rid of Deontay Johnson, which is a little more of a negative for them, but it's because they had Jalen Corker there. It's because they have Xavier Leggett coming through. They've got these younger wide receivers now who know how to run routes and they know how to get open. And that's actually allowed Bryce Young to make a lot of really good plays. Look, you can point to the Giants being a bad football team and you can say, look, they're not exactly the standard bearers for the NFL defenses. But Brian Burns had a pretty good game. Defensively, they were getting pressure up front. Chuba Hubbard made a lot of good plays in the running game, so that's the only area where the Giants really, really struggled. I thought Young did a really, really good job, and I think he proved to himself and proved to everyone else that he is actually a starting quarterback in this league. And if you want a comparison for it, just look across the board there. Like Daniel Jones, he's on his 72nd start now somehow, like unquestioned in New York still. He's not being dropped. He should have been benched at halftime. He had two wide open receivers for touchdowns on a flea flicker at the end of the second quarter on a 4th-and-1. He just looked down, took a sack like he's done over and over and over again. I don't exactly understand how this is continuing, but it's going to continue for a long time, even though Drew Locke and Tommy DeVito are probably better players than him. So it was a meaningful game because it was in Germany. It's probably one we wouldn't talk about much otherwise, but I do think it's fair at this point to give Bryce Young some praise and talk him up some bit, because at the start of this year everything looked like it was going to be over by now at this stage.
The
referee giving the calls auf Deutsch when they come to Ireland, will be doing Was Quelga?
Oh yeah, I'm sure, yeah. That's apparently there was a good thing on Instagram I don't know his name, it's Hockley, but I remember his dad, Ed Hockley.
Yeah.
And he Sean. Did the first game in Mexico, he did the first call in Spanish years and years and years back, and now his son did it in German, so that's actually kind of cool.
And what about the Patriots? Suddenly, I'm looking at Tankathon here, and the Patriots are going to have
Tankathon,
the seventh,
your favorite website.
Seventh, they're going to be picking seventh.
They went from first to seventh over the course of yesterday. Patriots are playing well. Their defense was brilliant yesterday. I'd be far more concerned, I think, from a storyline point of view about what's going on with the Bears. It looked like they were going very, very well. Caleb was finding his feet a little bit. The team was making a little bit sense, and then, you know, Jaden Daniels threw up a Hail Mary about 4 weeks ago, and it's like their season completely collapsed. It's like it killed them, because they've been absolutely awful since. And they were borderline pathetic yesterday. Like, they were like heading for the number one pick kind of bad. Like, you know, now they'll get back together, you would imagine, somehow. But that's that looks a bad football team all of a sudden.
They're 4-5, picking 16th.
We have a couple of Bears fans who listen to this podcast every single week, and they were talking to me about this game after this game yesterday, and the prevailing sentiment was, what Mick just said, that Hail Mary just ended any of the belief in this team. And I think part of the problem is Matt Eberflus is there as this defensive head coach, who's kind of a carryover who everyone doesn't really buy into, as much as they've improved their talent and they've improved their overall effectiveness, and they got rid of Luke Getsy last year, who was a terrible offensive coordinator. They don't really feel confident about the coaching staff and feel good about the coaching staff. I think when you're developing a young quarterback, a rookie quarterback, a high pick, and you've got pieces on defense, you can feel good about the team even if they're losing, but you just expect this better standard of performance and execution overall. And Caleb Williams, you saw him yesterday turning into sacks, you saw him panicking when he didn't have his first read, and that's the kind of thing that just makes you concerned about the long term rather than the short term. And I know they're probably a little dispirited because a lot of them came into this year with really high expectations because of the moves they had made in the offseason. So, and the other side of this, the Patriots, like, why do you guys keep winning games? Stop. Get higher draft picks. Get yourself a Jamar Chase. Give Drake May a better chance. Like, start tanking properly, Mick, will you?
Well, they also, like, you know, the coach is also on a audition process, you would imagine, you know, and
they're two games out of playoffs now.
I don't know about that, are they?
They are, yeah. They've got 3-7, 5-5.
So many teams.
Denver have a wild card at the moment at 5-5.
They've only beaten bad teams, and that's like, I wouldn't be getting carried away now, but at the same time,
but who are they playing?
It's nice to see them being well coached. What?
who are they playing the rest of the year? Because they've got very bad teams in that division. Well,
well
at least got
the Bills
Jets
twice, I think. So that's not going to go too well.
Should the Bills might be resting starters if it's the final week of the year. You know, you never know. They could sneak in there. Drake May goes on a run. Believe Mick, another Super Bowl's coming.
There's one more match I want to talk about, if that's okay.
Go for it.
Because there's just two sides of things. One of them, the Vikings beating the Jaguars.
Not a great game.
No, and it's just one to watch, I would say. Sam Darnold, they won that game on field goal. Sam Darnold didn't throw a touchdown. I'd say, let's not throw it out yet. But we did talk about him turning into a pumpkin and we're waiting for it to happen. I'd say just keep an eye on it. But the other side is how that game was won. Like, the Jags, I remember years ago, I talked to you about this years ago, where the Raiders, when they were at their worst, I remember one time they went and they got a sack and they all started celebrating the sack. And meanwhile, the other team just lined up and snapped the ball and they were all offside and they got a first down and they lost the game. And it was like, this reminded me of this so much last night, where they got a stop. The Vikings were going to have to punt the ball, give them one more chance. It wouldn't have mattered anyway. Mac Jones wasn't going to do anything. And your man just starts throwing digs and just starts punching this guy in the helmet like a lunatic. And obviously, first down, end the game. Mm. And it's like, that sums up where this franchise is at, where this team is at, where this coach, I don't know how he's lasted so long, given the level that they've had and the performances that they put out. So it's just like, I think people should realise sometimes when things are going absolutely awry, and that's the kind of crack you get up to then, like, you know.
The competition for the first pick is fierce. The following teams have two wins: Jacksonville, New York Giants, Tennessee Titans, Cleveland Browns, Las Vegas, Miami. Six teams are on two wins and they're all shite.
Yeah. You know what's amazing about that list?
There's a lot of Carolina have three, Patriots have three, New Orleans have three. They're not going to get too far away from that as well. Miami are the Jets. Well, Jets might get out of it and Miami will probably get out of it, but Dallas, the rest of them are all stuck there.
Dallas are stuck there because...
The amazing thing about that list is there's six teams on two wins, I think you said.
Yeah.
I think only two of them would pick a quarterback for sure. The four of them would be kind of thinking about whether we'll move on from our quarterback or not, which is just an indictment of the way the NFL coaches and the NFL offices, front offices work.
And who is the Caleb Williams this year? We're all waiting for, and then flops and the
guy who comes up November. No one knows yet.
The guy who comes up at number two is... I'm just bet on number two and the number two pick to be the offensive rookie of the year every year from now on.
So everybody's happy that the fixture's confirmed. We think there's going to be an Ireland game, in Ireland this time next year.
Yeah. We're going to
bring me Steelers Dolphins. That's what it's going to be. Steelers-Dolphins, I bet.
Steelers-Dolphins, a big game.
That would be great.
A lot of fans.
Yeah.
But that's isn't historically, there's a lot of Dolphins fans over here. And that's played into the decisions the NFL has made in the past, as far as I know.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it's like the Patriots or the 49ers, though. That would be, I don't even know if they'll play them next year, but we could fix that too. It's not too late. All right. Remember to tune in live on Sunday nights to listen to the Steelers home games on Off the Ball Sports Radio.
Against the Ravens this week.
That'll be a good one.
Lamar Jackson.
We will see you next week, folks. Take care.
US Sport.
On Off the Ball.
With 888 Casino. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.